A quick reminder before we get to today's episode, the science Kickstarter is underway. So if you aren't familiar with science, listen to this quick description of the graphic novel from writers Jason Inman and Ashley Victoria Robinson. It's a book I'm really excited about. I can't wait to get my hands on it and share it with my 7-year-old daughter. I think that Ashley and Jason are great writers, and their passion for comics is obvious, and it shows in the quality of their books. So take a quick listen and go pledge and share the Kickstarter with all your friends. Let's talk about your new Kickstarter. What's it all about?
It's called Science with an exclamation point.
So you gotta say it like that.
You gotta say it like Science.
Yeah, there you go. You gotta clip everybody's microphone when you say it.
Take care about that, everybody. Wake up.
Yeah. It stars a 14-year-old girl named Tamsin Trecru. It's more of a middle grade story, whereas Jupiter Jet was more of an all age story. So I guess that means it's a little bit edgier in the type of storytelling. But she is attending the Prometheus Institute. And it's the most amazing kind of school that has cute little robots called stats that fly around. It's got experimental physics. It's got amazing labs. But Tamsin's maybe not as happy to be there as she should be. And that's because her dead father used to be the headmaster there, and working there is what took him from her. So she's determined to, take the school down from the inside, like a normal teenager would want to do.
It's Harry Potter if Harry Potter wanted to destroy Hogwarts. There you go.
Tamsin is driven not only by, the trauma that comes along with losing a parent, but her father was a real smart science guy and downloaded his consciousness into her super cool glasses. So she actually sees a projection of him, and he can see everything that she's doing. And he's leading her on this quest, but he can also see like her interactions with her cute roommate, Garen, which is not what you want your dad to see when you're 14.
And the thing is, too, is that her father actually died when she was 3. So she never knew her father. The only father she has known is this holographic version of her father that has sort of existed around her. Science is a story that we think is pretty unique. I don't think there is a sort of teenager-y Star Trek science fiction-y with real facts out there. And if you like Jupiter Jet and you like our podcast, you like any of our tone, then I guarantee you're going to like this. You're going to like our flavor. And you hear about our passion for comics. Everything we do is how much we love comic books. And we inject that into our comics. Like, I think when you read our comics, especially Jupiter Jet and our stuff in the If anthologies and Love is Love, you can feel that love pouring through. And Science is the exact same thing. So if that doesn't convince you to buy Science or help us pre-order or make this book, then I don't know what will.
All right. If that sounds like something you might be interested in, I highly encourage you to go and check out the Kickstarter for Science. The good news is that in less than 36 hours, the Kickstarter was fully funded. So what that means for you, as someone who goes and does a pledge, you are guaranteed to get the book, right? Like, a lot of times you see something, a Kickstarter, you're excited, you pledge, and it doesn't get fully funded. And you're not out any cash, but you wanted the book. That's why you pledged in the first place. So you don't have to worry about that with Science. It's fully funded, and now we're on to stretch goals, right? And if you listen to our previous Spotlight episode on Science, you'll know that Jason and Ashley, the first thing they're going to do with any stretch goals they meet is add more content, more pages, more story. So again, I think it's completely worthwhile. I've already pledged. Go over there, do yourself a favor, and check it out. Welcome to episode 505 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another Valiant Sunday episode, and I'm going to continue with the chronology with Exo Manowar number 7. It's from the creative team of writer Robert Venditti. We have Lee Garbett on pencils, Stefan Guadiano on inks, and Moose Bauman on colors. So this issue actually starts with a flashback, 410 AD, which we know Arik was already taken away from Earth at that time. But we're in Rome, and we see several people hailing King Alarak. And a young boy is lifted up by his mother to try and see. And she is a Visigoth and says, Visigoths will be ruled by Roman swine no more. And he gets up, he throws a rock. He says, I'm a warrior, I am. And then he's distracted by a young girl behind him. And it turns out she's a plantling as well, left behind by the vine as she starts to speak to him in the vine native language. And she says, have you not found the gatherings yet? He says, the what? She says, all you have to do is close your eyes and concentrate. He closes his eyes, he concentrates, and he finds himself in the gathering. So he never knew that he wasn't human at that up until that point, and he now will never be alone. There are lots of us, it says. So it doesn't come right out and say that this is Alexander Dorian, but that's kind of the impression that I got. So as we turn the page, the story shifts forward to now. We're in Georgetown, Guyana, and Arik, who at the end of last issue had been told by Alexander Dorian that the Vine were coming and they needed to team up to stop the Vine. Otherwise, everything that was going to happen from that point forward was going to be Arik's fault. He doesn't really appreciate that sentiment, I'll say. He says, who are you to accuse me, foul beast? I had a wife and I was heir to the throne. You took everything from me, made me a slave. Now I've freed myself and I'm to blame? And Dorian says, you know, I wasn't party to any of that, but what's done is done. And I don't blame you for what you've done, but I will blame you for what will happen because the armor has chosen you and there's an invasion force on the way and humanity is going to suffer because of what you did. I'm talking annihilation. Like they are going to wipe out the planet Earth. So and Dorian goes on to say, I helped you escape from Ninjak at great personal risk to myself because I thought that you were the best chance for Earth to survive. So at least hear me out. And then if you decide you don't believe me, you can always kill me afterward. So Arik says, you are Vine. Why should I trust anything you say? And Dorian starts explaining that, yeah, I know that you worked as a slave for years on the colony ship. I understand what the Vine are and how helpless you must have felt being a slave and watching those around you die. You know, it's a miracle that you didn't go crazy spending days so close to fruit that you could never even eat, right? Because the Vine held it sacred. And he says, the elders fill our head with that religious babble from the moment we attend our first gathering. But the fact of the matter is, and he takes some fruit, a cherimoya, he says, native to the Andes region. Mark Twain declared it the most delicious fruit known to man. And I don't know if I'd go that far, but it's definitely up there. So he eats some of it right in front of Arik and he says, the Vine language doesn't even have words to express sweet or tart or sugary or succulent. You know, the gardens that you tended, you know this, the fruit would ripen on the vine and then fall to the ground and rot, a waste. He says, we're from two different species, but I have more in common with you, with humans, than I do my own kind, because you appreciate bounty and the pleasures of the world. You spent time among the vine, and you know that there's no concept of extravagance or no knowledge of flavor. They're no different from the mindless plants they worship. They don't live, they just survive, they just exist. And no matter what happens, despite the invasion, I'm not going to return to the vine without a fight. So he implores Arik. He says, let me help you. Together we can both go on enjoying this world. So Arik allows himself to taste the fruit. Well, Alexander Dorian says, the ship you escaped from travels the universe searching for planets inhabited by intelligent life. They leave behind what's called plantlings, offspring that can mimic the physiology of any species. And that's basically what Alexander Dorian is. And Arik says, show me where. Dorian says, they're everywhere. The vine who visited Earth in your day left plantlings in Ghanese, African, Chinese, Mayan, Australian, Aboriginals, even the Roman and Visigoths. Wide dispersal improves the chances of the species surviving. If one civilization dies out, there's still other plantlings that can flourish. And he says, personally, his own ancestors were left in northern Scotland, you know, raised by humans, no idea what they really are. And eventually, over time, the plantlings seek each other out. And the species continues today. Today, there are thousands of us living in secret around the world. So I guess what he's saying is, you know, eventually they come and breed with their own kind. I think that's what he's saying. But it's also not clear how long-lived the vine are because, you know, they kidnapped Arik way back when. Were those the same vine that he escaped from? And because he's come thousands of years in the future. Right. So I was never quite clear on that. You know, for all I know, Alexander Dorian is one of the original plantlings. I don't know. But Dorian's saying that all the vine want is not to come and conquer or destroy, but just to be everywhere, to spread wherever they go, never to return. And he says, aside from the whole abduction and slavery, because they need the slaves to work the gardens and the ships, it's actually pretty innocent. Well, it was until now when Arik stole the armor and came back to Earth, and now it's giving the fleet a chance to return. And once they've reclaimed it, they'll lay waste to all of humankind. So meanwhile, the whole time this conversation is happening, Ninjak, who had sent out those little flying sensor balls last issue, has been tracking this conversation, been listening in and honing in and tracking down where Alexander Dorian and Exo-Manowar are. While Alexander Dorian is telling Exo that the Vine are going to lay waste to all mankind and trying to get him to team up, he says, "What do you say?" And Arik flips over the table and fires his blaster. And Dorian's like, "What are you doing?" But he's actually firing at Ninjak. So through the wall, he sensed him, the armor sensed him. And Dorian says, "What is it?" Arik says, "Shut up, the robe man is here, the armor senses him." So Ninjak comes crashing through the wall, throwing his throwing stars again that are probably coated with that same tranquilizer that knocked out Arik the first time. But this time he's armored up, so there's not really any chance of him getting knocked out. And then Arik fires off a really bright light that blinds Arik momentarily. And as Arik's firing blindly, Ninjak manages to get behind him and get his blade right up to Dorian's throat. And Arik says, "A coward's trick, but it will require more than bright light to stop me from killing you." And I love Ninjak's response. He says, "How come every time I employ a stratagem, the idiot I use it against labels me a coward?" Like, Ninjak, it's not about fighting fair. It's about fighting to win. He's going to do whatever it takes. If that means pulling hair, biting, blinding somebody, throwing sand in their eyes, dirt, whatever, it might be considered dirty fighting, but in Ninjak's world, there's no such thing, right? You fight to win, or you don't live to fight another day. So as he's holding Dorian hostage, Exo says, "If you think I have any loyalty to that creature, you're a fool. I'll gladly blast through him and get rid of you both." And Dorian, before Ninjak can even say anything, says, "Are you not paying attention? Hello, invasion fleet? Any chance we can work together?" And then turns to Ninjak and says, "And you, you're being paid to execute your own death warrant. You give the armor to Clement, he gives it to the vine, and then that's it." Ninjak doesn't buy for a second. He's like, "You may have duped the oaf, but I won't fall for your stories of little green men." And Dorian's like, "Seriously? This armor has a lightning sword, for crying out loud. Remotely resemble terrestrial tech? You don't think you're being manipulated? I'll prove it to you." Ninjak says, "A truce for the moment?" Arik says, "Very well, I'll honor it." So then Dorian asks Ninjak to name a place. "Have your way, pick a place." And Ninjak says, "Through the heart usually works best, but whatever." And Dorian's like, "No, not pick a place to stab me. A location, anyone you want. Anywhere you want." So Ninjak says, "Caracas, Venezuela." Dorian closes his eyes. He goes to a gathering. He tells the council that he and Exo escaped, and he's kind of got Exo on his side, and they're in Caracas, Venezuela. So sure enough, no sooner does he return to his body than Ninjak gets a call And it's Clement telling him that the weapon is in Caracas, Venezuela. How long can you be there? I love Ninjak's response. Caracas, you don't say. He's like, 2 hours. And Clement says, okay, circumstances have changed. Kill the guy wearing the armor. We're on a short clock. Bring me the weapon. Your pay just doubled. And Ninjak says, I'm en route. And then hangs up and tells Dorian, you know, I never liked Clement. I like him even less knowing he's a whatever. And so Dorian explains how Vine can communicate through the shared consciousness that they call gatherings. And he'll gladly tell them all they need to know. But right now they need to move because the invasion is coming. And these three, Ninjak, Exo, and Dorian are all that stands in the way. So Ninjak and Exo agree to work together, with Exo saying, I've fought invaders all my life. If it's a war the creatures want, they will have it. And Dorian's pretty happy about this. He says, good, let's start pruning. So meanwhile, in deep space, the Vine invasion fleet is assembled. And we see that some of the Vine soldiers are wearing their own kind of Vine-created version of the Exo Manowar armor. It's nowhere near as powerful as Shanhara, but you can tell just by the way it looks that it's based on Shanhara. It seems to have the same type of wrist blasters, and they're firing on slaves. First firing to take off one arm, then firing to take off the other, and then in the head. And the priest walks in and says, the commando armor, what is the meaning of this? He says, don't worry, priest. The animals will be rendered into the compost room, so your hallowed gardens will be fed. And the priest says, this looks like a preparation for a mission of execution, not recovery. Council has ordered. He says, I'm aware of my orders, but you forget that I have fought Shanhara before, and if my soldiers aren't ready, then the battle will cost much more than an eye, which is what he lost in the battle with Exo. He says, needlessly sacrificing soldiers to the Shanhara armor, that's your job. Right? It's what the priests have done for thousands of years. And the priest responds, the armor deserves your reverence, not your revenge. Please. He says, I do not bow to something that can be bent to the will of an animal. Chain the targets. And they continue training by basically slaughtering these guys. It's pretty gutless, honestly. So meanwhile, back on Earth, Georgetown, home of the chief advisor to the president of Guyana, who is actually another Vine plantling. Alexander's waiting at his house when he gets home, and he explains that he gave misdirection to the council because he believes there's a spy. Because his name, the Vine he's visiting, the plantling he's visiting, his name's Sadek. And Sadek's like, you told the council that you were in Caracas. What are you doing here? He says, I fear there's a spy among us. Besides, I do not know who to trust besides you. So Sadek says, all right, well, how can I help? And Dorian says, I need to get to London discreetly and as quickly as possible. The Visigoth has taken Shanhara there, and I worry that he may know about Clement and MI6. It's like, how? Is Shanhara communicating with the Visigoth? He says, we have no choice. Dorian says, we have no choice. We have to act fast. Come on, we must go at once. So Sadek says, okay, I can get a plane. I'll just tell him that there's an emergency meeting with the ambassador to the United Kingdom. And then he asks Dorian if he informed Patrick that they're coming. He's like, I don't risk it. The spy could be among Clement's people. And Sadek says, a spy? It's unthinkable. Have you any idea who it might be? And Dorian says, yes, as Ninjak is behind Sadek and runs him through. Dorian says, it's me. So Sadek is literally pinned to his chair by Ninjak's sword, and Dorian's kind of waking him up. He passes out from blood loss. He says, you've been to your last gathering. And Sadek says, well, the council will hear of this. They'll know you betrayed them. Dorian says, probably, but it won't because you told him, and has Ninjak finish him off. So soon in London, Exo Manowar is literally sitting on a bench outside of MI6. And when Ninjak gets there, he says, you're just sitting here? And Exo's like, yeah, I said I would wait for you. And Ninjak, who you know is always in the shadows, is incredulous. He's like, out in the open where anyone can see you? He's like, why should I be afraid? I have this armor. I'm Arik of Dacia, nephew of Alaract, sacker of Rome, let them face me. And Ninjak's like, right. Alexander mentioned you didn't come from around now, but you got to realize, Arik, that this is a different time. Armies don't hack at each other out in the open anymore. It's all about finesse. Arik's not buying it. He's like, strength is always the superior of subtlety on the battlefield. And again, Ninjak's not persuaded. He says, spoken like a true China shop bull. So I hope you're ready to put your exuberance to work, because there's no telling how many Vine are standing between us and Clement. So get ready to stampede over them like you never have before. We're about to storm the headquarters of MI6. And we get the final page showing the headquarters of MI6 with the creator credits there. So it's a pretty fun story. It definitely ramps up the action, moves the story along, in as much as at the end of last issue, we had Dorian, who, despite looking human, is not, doesn't really have any kind of front of the line powers, doesn't have any ability to fight the way Exo and Ninjak do, but he certainly can provide logistical support and intelligence. Like, he knows about the enemy. So he's a vital part of the team. So that's really what this issue 7 is all about. It's bringing these three together to try to head off the invasion. We also get a little more about Commander Trill and how obsessed he is with revenge on Exo for escaping, for killing his guards, for taking one of his eyes. He doesn't have any illusions about what he wants, right? He's following the council's orders only because the council's orders align with his own wishes. If the council were to pivot and tell him, no matter what, we're retrieving Shanhara and the slave will come back, he must be taken alive. There's no doubt that Trill would ignore that order completely. He is all about revenge, single-minded and focused. And it's kind of interesting because when you think about it, what Dorian said about his species is true. They don't seem to ever take pleasure in anything. They don't seem to really live. They just survive. And it's almost like the only emotions they do have are negative emotions, like getting angry at a slave for eating fruit or holding a grudge. So, and I know they're an alien species, so I shouldn't necessarily compare like human emotions to the way they think and feel, but it's kind of the way they're portrayed, you know, especially Trill. He's portrayed as being very petty and obsessed with revenge and regaining his honor, which to me just tells me he's got a giant ego, which again is kind of strange because these plantlings, as Dorian said, or the vine rather, like Dorian said, leave a pretty boring life in a way. It's almost like, what's your purpose? Just to continue flying around the galaxy and stealing babies and replacing them with like human vine hybrids? It's almost like that kind of motivation would be something that's like ingrained in them on an instinctual level, that they're, what they need to do is just to spread, like a virus almost. So it's kind of strange when you think about it in that way. And also the whole time travel thing, like, so when Arik escaped, you know, he'd been on the ship for 5 years or whatever, but then he came 1600 years into the future. So these guys are preparing to battle. When they travel to Earth, are they going to have the same leap forward, or are they in the present day? You see how it doesn't quite. Yeah, did 1600 years pass when they left Earth and went to wherever they were? And so really Arik has been displaced through time for the last 5 years. Like, it doesn't, I'm not exactly sure. I may have to ask Robert Venditti next time I see him, because I'm a little fuzzy on the details. Or if any of you Valiant fans that listen to Valiant Sundays know this, then let me know on social media, because I'm very curious. And it may be that it's explained later in the series and I've just forgotten, but I'm just not, I don't really remember. The other thing I wanted to say about this issue, and hopefully this doesn't come across as too controversial, because I'm certainly not disparaging Robert Venditti's writing whatsoever, but in this issue we get, I feel, an extremely small amount, like little to no character progression for Arik, which I feel is a little strange considering that it's this early in the run for the character. We do get progression in the team up, right? In the truce and these three agreeing to work together. But that's more story progression, I would argue, than actual character progression. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing at all. I really enjoy this issue. It's I wouldn't say action-packed, but a lot does happen. But it's all in service to the story rather than in service to kind of fleshing out Arik. But again, I think, you know, when you're telling a story and you're reestablishing a universe, you do need those kind of issues where the focus kind of shifts off the main character to deal with like setting and supporting characters and things like that. So, you know, it was just a couple issues ago that Ninjak got introduced, and I would say that he has some character progression in this. He's starting to trust Arik. He's starting to trust Alexander Dorian. He's learned that his superiors at MI6 aren't even human. So it certainly gives him more growth and more of the spotlight than Arik does, even though this book is, you know, Exo Manowar, which that's Arik. But again, I think it's okay because it is setting up situations that you can then go back to later on and say Arik was learning. He was growing as a character. It just wasn't obvious at the time because he comes to a truce with Ninjak, which maybe the Arik before he was kidnapped might not have, right? The Arik before he was kidnapped who hadn't seen any futuristic kind of technology in that kind of situation, there's no way he would have bought Dorian betraying his people. You know, he was ready to kill Dorian, but Dorian proved himself. So there is growth. It's just not maybe obvious growth, or it's setting up ideas and experiences for Arik to go through now that will then lead to growth later on, which again, I think that's a perfectly valid way to tell a story and keep it moving forward because you do want it to be entertaining. It's just something that I hadn't necessarily thought of until I read this book again. I was like, oh, you know, I think Arik says less than any other character in the book. He certainly has fewer dialogue balloons than Ninjak or Alexander Dorian. So it's interesting when you think about he's the star of the book, but he's almost like a supporting character in this particular issue. But I'm loving Ninjak. We've already seen a little bit of character growth from him, even over the little bit of time he's been out in the Valiant Universe, the new Valiant Universe anyway. This is only the third issue that he's appeared in. So it's a fun story. The art from Lee Garbett. I mean, he was solid every time he came over to draw anything for Valiant. I always really enjoyed his art. He has an interesting storytelling style. He swings the camera around a lot, which I enjoy. It keeps the eye from getting bored. He rarely, except for some of the action scenes, he rarely has the camera angle the same in consecutive panels. So again, I think he does an incredible job. Stefano Guidiano does a great job inking him. The colors by Moose Bauman, you know, they're pretty primary, which kind of suits this story that's being told. You know, it is a superhero story, but he does go less vibrant at times when it suits the story, like the flashback at the beginning that starts off the issue is a little muted. So when it comes to the blast of Shannara and the commando armor, though, the color's dialed up to the max, which is really great. So yeah, I'm really enjoying this return to Exo Manowar. It's been a long time since I've read these issues. So I think one more, I think issue 8 kind of ends the first story arc. So once we finish there, we'll probably move over to Harbinger. And we still want to talk about some Harbinger Wars 2. We got the fourth issue. Now we just need the aftermath. And we'll catch up on some other titles too. I've been doing the chronologies because Jesse's been unable to join me, and I really want him to join me for the kind of the wrap up and the final thoughts for Harbinger Wars 2. So as soon as he's available, we'll definitely get back on that. But in the meantime, I hope that you're all enjoying these chronology issues, this flashback, so to speak, as much as I am. So, all right. I want to thank everybody for joining. As always, please tell your friends about us, subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. All past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.